This is the Savvy Citizen Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Adam Gobb. We're continuing this week with our series of Black History Month podcasts. In this episode, we're talking to James Bowie, who was the first black man to become Gaston County's chief of police at the Gaston County Police Department. James and I are going to be discussing some of the hot topics surrounding policing today, his time in the police department force, and how things have changed from when he first started as a rookie cop out on the streets to when he finished his time in that leadership position. James, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Adam. Pleasure to be here.
So in your time in Gaston County, working your way up, what was Gaston County like in the mid-80s when you were first kind of getting your feet wet as a patrol officer?
At least the area that we worked as a patrolman was rural, the unincorporated area. So much more spaced out, actually. It's a lot more populated now than it was then, but a lot more spaced out than the county. Various pockets of communities had their own way of doing things, I noticed, you know, depending on where you were from between Cherwell to Belmont. Various communities had different practices, different traditions, different belief cultures and everything else. And so, you know, you had to kind of get to learn those communities in order to provide them the service they anticipated, expected, and deserved.
When you first started out as a police officer, was there the goal in mind of eventually becoming a high-ranking officer or becoming a chief, or was that something that was a goal of yours maybe later on?
Well, not initially. Initially, I came in with my eyes wide open. Chief was nowhere in the picture. It was, let's learn this job first. And as I became comfortable with my surroundings and understanding my role and understanding more about the police department and where it stood in the realm of policing in a broader perspective, that's when I decided, yes, I'd love to be the chief of this place. It was a great department. I felt very much welcome. I was being taught so much. It was a department that thrived on educating its officers, and I found that it was a perfect spot for me to fit in. And my supervisors on up, from my sergeant on up, and even my fellow patrolmen, were more like teachers than peers to me initially. They taught me a lot coming in from the outside, and so that I could learn and stay safe and at the same time serve the community.
When did you become chief of Gaston County Police Department?
I would say I did an interim for a while, so it was somewhere around 2009, 2010.
Okay.
You would think that I would remember the exact date, which I guess I should, but I never focused on that, even once I made chief. The dates didn't mean anything. It was the level of service we were providing is all I focused on, and all the accolades meant nothing. It's service-oriented, service-minded.
Was there anything, when you became chief, was there anything that kind of stuck out to you as becoming the first black man to become chief of that department in Gaston County, that you were kind of setting a milestone or breaking a barrier?
There was a host of things, I would guess. Number one on my list was don't mess up. Mm. And don't break the confidence of the people that put you there and the confidence of the men and women who are working with you and for you. That was number one on my mind. I don't know that I had the time to just sit back and think about being the first of anything.
Sure.
If anything, it was, we need to continue to lead in policing and accelerate what we're doing, elevate the service that we're doing, which I think we did. And the police department, as far as I know, continues to be progressive.
What were some of your goals when you were chief? I mean, obviously, you know, each chief has kind of, they come at everything from a little bit of a different perspective. But, you know, did you have any major goals for your administration and what were some of the biggest accomplishments you felt you had when you were there as chief?
I think one of the goals that I wanted was for us to be, as a whole, able to communicate effectively with each other so that we could actually make sure that we were clear-minded in what we were doing and the direction we were going as an agency. I found that to be the best way to make sure that we're providing the service we needed to the public. That was one of the things. And I always said, you know, if we stayed united in thought, we would be uniformed in action. And that mindset, I made sure that we carried out. The other thing in dealing with an overall mindset was I wanted to make sure that as part of our communication efforts with each other and the citizens, that everyone always remember one common thing is that everybody views the world from where they sit. And if they could understand that, then they could learn to communicate more effectively by just exchanging seats, actively listening to the person that you're dealing with so that you could understand how to communicate back with them effectively. It's one of the most important tasks in law enforcement, the ability to communicate effectively, the ability to be patient and listen. So that was at the top of my goal. And the other thing is, we were already a great investigative agency. Those that came before me had already set the job. So I want to make sure that we stayed there, if not elevated. And I think one of the accomplishments that I could say that I'm most proud of is the development of an offender-based investigation program known as OBI, which I spoke all over the U.S. on. And we were one of the first to do it. It's very effective. And we continue to be and elevated ourselves in terms of criminal investigations to probably, I would say, number one in the state in terms of solving crime. Our partner on violent crimes were up to 96% during my tenure. Wow. And our property crimes were right around 47, 48%, which is almost unheard of. If you look at it
right
on a national perspective, the average is 20% for property crimes and probably down to 50%, 55% for violent crimes. And it's one of the things I don't think you would have heard us brag about or talk about, but we stayed focused on, and we did. We wanted to make sure we were number one in that category because that's part of what the agency was started for. And we wanted to be the best at doing it.
Is it a little bit weird talking about Black History Month and in some way feeling like you are a part of Black history in Gaston County? I mean, I think a lot of times when we think about history, it's like, you know, things that happened, you know, 50, 100 years ago. You know, the fact that this is still happening in the relatively recent past, is that a little bit odd for you?
It is, in a sense, to think of yourself as the first after all of these decades have passed before me. But at the same time, I never keep the focus on me and where I was. And I always have to remember, in terms of Black history, is that I only made it because I stood on the shoulders of so many that came before me. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds very cliche-ish, but it's actually true. We had a number of Black officers that were mentors to me and had made it all the way up to even assistant chief before me. I wouldn't have made it to where I was without them. And I wouldn't have made it without all the other officers and supervisors that were part of the Gaston County Police Team, regardless of race or gender. We worked well as a team, and it was because of the team that I was able to flourish and make it to where I was.
Do you think that sense of the camaraderie and the ability to work together, you know, as an agency, regardless of race, do you think that helps project out into the community and potentially help the community in that respect as well?
I would hope so. There's always going to be diversity of thought and feeling, no matter where you're at, Gaston County, Mecklenburg County, New York City. Navigating through that, again, goes back to one basic thing, the ability to communicate effectively with your citizenry.
In your position now in at Gaston Day, I mean, that seems like that's still a big part of what you do is communicating, and obviously now just, you know, a different population that you're focused on than what you dealt with kind of in the police department. But has that been, you know, the communication kind of skills that you learned while in the police department, is that something you've been able to kind of take forward with you into your current role?
Yes, absolutely. And I approach it a little bit differently. Part of what I wanted to do was be here as a resource and an asset for the school, but at the same time, based off of some of the things that were taking place in law enforcement as a whole, which is basically the perception of police legitimacy has been declining and still is, unfortunately. And I wanted the people at Gaston Day, especially the students and young students, kids from pre-K all the way up, to know that police officers are human too. And regardless to all the bad that you normally see on TV, that's a very small percentage of officers throughout the United States. And the vast majority are good people. And I use myself as that example to communicate with them, answer questions about law enforcement, police, to get a feeling a bit of being more comfortable with police and not always being scared or thinking we're there for a confrontation. But it has to start at the roots level, and we have to start with younger generations as well, so that they understand that police are there for them. We are their friends. We're not all bad, because sometimes the media can overshadow the good.
When you have things that happen, like last year when you had the death of George Floyd, how do you have conversations with folks about trust in the police departments? And obviously it's a different department than your own, and so you can't speak specifically to each individual one where there may be an incident, but just as a whole overall, how do you continue to talk about providing confidence in the police force when you have things like that are causing protests and things on a mass scale?
Again, this is my opinion. I can't speak for all of those police chiefs out there.
Sure.
It's a very difficult thing to do, and I like to call it an uncomfortable conversation that has to take place. Mm. And it happens in individual moments, in individual places with different people, some most of the time very spontaneously. George Floyd was a difficult moment for everyone, not just police, but people who may have always heard about it, but never really got to see it. It was kind of hearsay, or take the word or don't take the word of the media. This was 8 minutes and 46 seconds of in your face. It was vivid. It was there for everybody to see. That's something that doesn't happen too often. And its impact was very, very strong and very wide. And I think it got a lot of people to thinking about, where are we with policing? Unfortunately, the terminologies of defunding and the anger was there. Some to be expected, some unfortunately out of control and should not have taken place.
Right.
But when you're dealing with emotions and you're dealing with something so vivid just put in front of you for that long a period of time, no one knows what the emotions will be behind it and the reactions behind it. But we're at that point. We've been at that point where these uncomfortable conversations must take place for better understanding of what Black people go through. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's one thing to think about it or think you understand. It's another thing to see it in the way that you did. Changes everything.
You talked a little bit about the idea of defunding the police and just the terminology there. I wonder if, from your experience, would there be benefits to having more social workers or psychologists or folks that can help? Because it does seem like, at least in as I've dug into this issue, that there are areas where police are kind of thrown at things that maybe they aren't the best prepared for or the best qualified to handle, and they're asked to do more than really maybe they should.
Yes, it's a double-edged sword, and that's a very tough question to answer broadly.
Yeah.
As with, you know, it's very complicated. There are growth areas that are needed all around on both sides. But law enforcement as a whole, and I'm saying this not being defensive of my former police, Gaston County Police, because
right.
It's so easy to fall into that trap and look at your department and say, well, that's not happening here, therefore it's not happening.
Right.
When you look at policing on a much broader perspective throughout the U.S., not every department is the same. Not every standard's the same. Not every policy's the same. Not every use of force is the same.
Certainly.
And you have to remember at the same time that all the police are taken from the general public. We're not reared and raised on some farm outside the country and then transported in with police mentality and every question ready to go. And it unfortunately doesn't work that way. So sometimes you bring in the bad with the good, and you hope that you can weed them out fast enough before harm is done. But there are growth areas on both sides, and in policing as a whole, it is probably time for us to look at some form of reforming police as a whole. Mm. And I mean that from standard things. So a standard, there should basically be a standard use of force. I mean, the same use of force that I apply and the continuum that I use to elevate or de-escalate a situation should be the same in Gaston County as it is in New York City or Arizona and Tucson and
right.
Everywhere else. There really shouldn't be much of a difference. We know that the RAND Corporation, as far back as the 70s, said law enforcement should have a post education. We're not there. Law enforcement loves to think of itself as a profession. I love to think of it as a profession, but we're not. we don't have the same standards. If you apply those that are really considered true professions, a doctor, a lawyer, we don't follow the standards that give you that title. Could we? Yes. That's where reform takes place. In looking at those areas that we need to improve, increasing our education. You talk about, should we have social workers, more social workers? Absolutely. Mental stress, I'll say, is very broad in America, especially with COVID right now. People are facing different crises now than they did before. It affects people differently. And the ability of an officer to identify a person that is being mean and destructive versus having a mental breakdown has to take place in seconds, which means there's a lot of errors that can take place. And unfortunately for police, whenever there's an error and it's a judgment, a call that was made in a matter of seconds, the rest of America takes days and months to evaluate it and determine the outcome, whether it was good or bad.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's a double-edged sword when you say, yeah, well, you didn't make the right decision. We should have had a social worker there. But I guarantee you, so in some incidents, even if you had a social worker to be there or be first to respond, police would still have to be there for the safety of that individual, that right. social worker.
Right.
Because they too could get themselves hurt in trying to de-escalate the situation or assess the individual they're dealing with. So all of these things are not as simple as one would think. There's a lot that can be done, but we have to do some things in terms of segmenting what we want to approach and how we want to approach it for the best results. One of the things is take law enforcement and break it down and not keep it just part of the criminal justice system. When you talk about criminal justice reform, it's too big.
Yeah.
That's like three elephants in a room. Forget about just one. Right?
Yeah.
But if you separate law enforcement from the criminal justice system in terms of looking at how to reform it, maybe you have better solutions. But when you try to combine it with the restructuring of the criminal justice system as a whole, the jail, the courts, mm-hmm. all those in-between things in there, those little things that most people don't understand or know about, it becomes too complicated, and we end up with no solution at all. We end up just talking. I truly believe that there could be positive reform in law enforcement, and we're ready for it. But it takes time and commitment. And the commitment has to happen not just on law enforcement. It has to happen on the public side also. We hear these talk about take away their administrative, if they are put on administrative leave, they shouldn't be paid. We hear that they should not get qualified immunity and they should get their own attorneys. Well, I think sometimes people forget that law enforcement is not one of those jobs where you make $100,000 or $200,000. You're lucky if you break into the 50s, and that's working hard with overtime and maybe moving up the ranks.
Right.
And so, you know, we're talking about taking away things to protect them and that would basically bankrupt them if they did any one little thing wrong. Mm. Could you imagine what would happen to you if someone accused you of not treating them right or saying something that breaches a policy and you're put on administrative leave and told you don't get paid until we're finished with the investigation? What happens to you, especially if you didn't do what you were accused of? And we know that happens from time to time. How do you survive then? And who are we going to have if you continued, if you was to implement that? Who are you going to have to provide law enforcement?
Right.
I'm sure I can convince any of my family members or younger family members or friends to get in law enforcement when they're completely unprotected. And anyone at any given time can be human and make a mistake. To some extent, over so many decades, law enforcement has contributed to, and media and the public's general view, is dehumanized law enforcement. We're not really thought of as human. We're machines to some degree that can't make a mistake. And when we do, we should be severely punished. Well, let's continue with that thought of severely punishing and taking away all of these things. Shouldn't there be some compensation on the other end?
Right.
If you want to look at it as a profession and that of a doctor, a lawyer, even somebody like an anesthesiologist who's had to pay for their own insurance to cover themselves, well, I think they make pretty good salary to cover their own expenses for the insurance. So if you expect law enforcement to do that, wouldn't you compensate them for it? Are we ready to do that? Are we ready to pay law enforcement a wage that could handle what you're expecting them to no longer receive should they have a complaint on them, whether it's considered valid or not? those are the things that you really have to think about. But it's so easy that when you're caught up in an emotion, and you go back to a George Floyd, that you want people punished. And there was no doubt in that, that someone should be punished. Someone should be convicted and someone should go to jail. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But do you punish the whole law enforcement community in a way that takes away from the ability of law enforcement to really grow and eventually provide you what you expect? You can't do away with law enforcement.
No.
It is the divide between order and chaos. So how do you correct it? How do you get it better? How do you get it to meet your expectations? Serious conversation has to take place again, where we have to look at it from all sides and really work on what we're doing and what we're expecting. Basic law enforcement training is 3 to 4 months, depending on where you're at. Is that enough? Is that enough to really evaluate whether someone should wear that badge? That's one of the most powerful things. You have the ability to take away someone's freedom. You have the ability to use deadly force. Our assessments of the individuals we hire should probably take place a lot longer. Should probably have a little bit more separation from home. Maybe we extend it 8 months. Some places you go, I think in Virginia, and I think basic law enforcement training is a year.
Oh, wow.
And you go to a campus and you stay there on that campus where they assess you, not just your physical attributes and whether you can complete tasks physically, but mentally, where you're at and are you worth wearing that badge? I always used to tell my officers, you know, the badge is pinned to your heart, not your shirt. Mm-hmm. If I find it on your shirt, maybe you don't need to be an officer anymore. If we keep that mentality, then we should pour that same mindset into how we train our officers before they hit the street. So if people really want to get serious about the transformation of police and the elevation in order to meet the citizens' expectation, then we need to get serious about pay, basic law enforcement training, what we're teaching them, how much are we going to teach them, how many hats do they wear? Because that is a problem. Like you said, the social worker. Well, we're expected to be a social worker out there. We're expected to assess an individual for their mental capacity. We're expected to be a teacher and help young kids make it in life. We're expected to be that enforcement officer and strict and stern when we need to be. We're expected to make split-second life decisions. When you have all of these things coming at you, isn't it easy to mess up?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it easy to fall back into this thing we call being human and make a mistake? So if you don't like the mistakes that happen, believe me, it's not liked on either side. No one wants to make those mistakes that are costly and makes anybody look bad. We need to invest the right amount of time and make some universal foundational rules across the U.S. for law enforcement. Your use of force continuum should be the same, as I mentioned before. Why would it be any different? Why would you be able to use a chokehold in one place and not use it in another? Why are we using chokeholds? If this is the question and we know we shouldn't be doing, there should be some measure where we're uniformed all the way through. Again, I go back to united in thought, uniformed in action. We're divided in thought right now on law enforcement, so we can't be uniformed in any action. I think we can get there. We just got to get serious about taking the talk and not grandstanding on any side and really sitting down and rolling up our sleeves and getting to work. I think as an American society, we can do this. On all accounts, what we're looking for is human dignity on both sides. On all sides, we want respect. But most importantly, what everybody wants is some form of empathy. When it's not there, that's when it gets emotional.
I think you make some fantastic points there. And I think oftentimes it does seem like there's only two options sometimes. It's like you either, you know, either back the blue or you don't. And I think that there's kind of what you're talking about here is you absolutely, you know, you want to have support for the police and the community, but, you know, people that are saying, hey, there needs to be reform. And it's like, there's definitely some validity to some of the things that are being said on the opposite side too.
Absolutely. And so you can't get emotional. Emotional intelligence is one of the most critical things, I would like to say, in law enforcement, but it's in everything. In everything, you have to have some form of emotional intelligence in order to deal with the complexities of life. And when we are absent that, we make rash decisions.
If you were where you were back in the mid-80s and starting out in it, you know, wanting to go into a policing career, looking at the landscape of 2021, would you still want to go in and be a police officer today? Or has the ground shifted so much that would be something that might make you reconsider that career choice?
That is a tough question, because in my heart of hearts, my answer is yes. In my heart of hearts, my answer is yes. I still want to be that officer. I still want to be the guy to make that change. So absolutely. But when you start thinking about it and you start thinking about the emotional side, of course, and where we're at in policing and can we get it down, yeah, there's some hesitancy. When you think about the dislike for law enforcement, and the dangers that come with it nowadays, and the expectations are getting to the point where it's too difficult to meet, yeah, there's some hesitancy. But I still have to say in my heart of hearts, law enforcement is so critical to the foundation of our American society. It's the divide between order and chaos. Yes, I'd still do it. And I'm still, I can't say that I stopped. I'm still a reserve. I'm still certified. In my heart of hearts, I guess I'll always be one. Mm. I'll never step away. So while I can be critical of my own, I also know that my own is really good. Yeah. We have more good than we have bad. That bad gets overshadowed so easily by the media. And I'm not blaming the media for it, because it's a lot different now with the media and all these social outlets than it was 30 years ago, almost 40 years ago when I started. Everything traveled through word of mouth. Now it's out there instantly, and decisions to be made can happen instantaneously, whether right or wrong. So yes, it's difficult for someone young, which is even more the reason why we have to prepare them in a different way, which is even more the reason why reform is more necessary, but not necessary from a negative standpoint. We need to go about this in a positive standpoint. We need to go about this as a way to make sure that we're ensuring our officers are doing right and doing what's best to stay safe, while at the same time providing exemplary, excellent service to the citizens they serve.
I really appreciate kind of the thoughtfulness and just the depth that you've provided to the questions I've had this morning. I think it's been a really good conversation, and I genuinely appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. There's so much more I'd love to talk about law enforcement. I talk about it all day, but thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak for this little bit.
Absolutely. James Bowie, thanks so much. I appreciate it, sir.
You're welcome.